that makes me know that we had the right idea in the beginning, and we just need to maintain our focus and elevate. We update our formulas. We have certain formulas, but we update them with the times and everything, you know. And so.
Hello, my basketball friends, and welcome to episode 21 of the Teardrop Runners. Fuck it. We'll do it live. Woo! We should drop a sound effect in there. And if we didn't drop a sound effect in there, I'm sure you can all imagine some kind of Inside Edition type of sound effect in that spot. Welcome to the Teardrop Runners. This is a weekly podcast of four old friends who would like to get together and talk about basketball analytics, but life gets in the way. One of us was eaten by an alligator. Another one is currently working as my manservant. Rob, the sparkling water, cone gas. Thank you. Welcome to the Teardrop Runners. I am your host, Scott, a.k.a. the Walnut, a.k.a. the Pod Mamba. And with me only this week is...
This is Manziel, and I'm really worried that Rob still needs this level of instruction.
Yeah, you know, and I think he's being passive aggressive, to be honest with you. And I would make a bigger deal out of it if it wasn't for the terrible reversal of fortune that he suffered. Demotions can be hard on the round. Yeah. All right, guys. This is an emergency podcast because we haven't done one in a while, and we've been having a hard time getting a quorum together. That's some behind the scenes business. Partly because of the alligator thing. Anyway, the playoffs are upon us. We are one night away from the end of the regular season. We're recording this on Tuesday night, April 16th. Manziel, on a level of pumped to unbelievably pumped, how pumped are you about the 2013 NBA playoffs?
I'm pretty pumped.
That wasn't one of the choices, was it?
I think that's
I guess it was. It's between pumped. Yeah, all right, pumped. All right. Yeah. Okay. Pretty pumped. Double P.
Pretty pumped. You know, there's not eight good matchups in the first round, but I think there'll be one killer matchup every round.
All right.
The other.
All right. Well, I agree with you. I'm going to give it an EP. Of course, that is extraordinarily pumped because even though I think that the Eastern Conference is essentially a done deal, there's still a lot of things to look forward to in both conferences. And I've just loved following this league this year. So I'm looking forward to it. Manziel, what matchups are we interested in here?
So there are not a large number of what we expect to be competitive matchups in the first round of the 2013 NBA playoffs presented by Sprite.
Wait, are they presented by Sprite? Don't give Sprite any free rides here. We got a
Tostitos?
Huge listenership.
Tostitos.
I think it's the Huggies Fall into Softness NBA Finals.
So these non-competitive matchups, and they're not quite final, but we're just going to assume that the final rankings we have right now are final. We have Miami versus Milwaukee, which has not seemed competitive. New York versus Boston.
Wait, hold on. It doesn't seem competitive?
I give Milwaukee a 0% chance of winning that series.
I'm going to give them -5.
-5.
Yeah. Milwaukee, I think they would have to create some kind of loophole in the universe.
They would need 2 Dikembe Mutombos to win that series.
2 what?
2 Dikembes.
And 2 major injuries.
And a Baron Davis, I believe, actually.
Yeah.
New York versus Boston, which will be a fun series.
Did you see that New York picked up Quentin Richardson today?
Yeah. I did see that. I think
to piss off Paul Pierce. Speaking of double Ps.
Well, I believe he hasn't played since 2011. Is that right?
I think that's right, but I think that his sole like remaining skill on his NBA resume is like irritates Paul Pierce to the point of technical fouls.
Well, I think that's worth it then.
I totally agree. I love it.
Indiana-Chicago.
Sorry, I fell asleep when you said Indy, yeah, and I just fell asleep. What was the rest of that?
Well, we might actually see the shot clock sped up a little bit in this series, special rule. Just to get a little action going on.
I'd certainly be watching it on fast forward if I was you.
We could see a score below 60 twice in this series. Put it out there.
I totally disagree. I think we should bet on that right now. You give me some kind of odds.
I will give you – so I'm going to bet on 2. So you have to give me some pretty good odds on that.
Mm-hmm. What do you want?
25-1.
Get out of my face with that junk. I'm not giving you 25 of anything.
25-1 is pretty good.
All right. What's the next series?
Then we have Brooklyn and Atlanta, which, although a 4-5 matchup, is, I would say, exceptionally boring.
Well, I think, I mean, it seems like everyone's written this one off, partially because everyone's written these two teams off. And that's fair enough. I could, at the same time, see this being a fun series. I like the way Devin Harris has been playing. And I actually like the way Deron Williams has been playing of late. So it could be worth a couple of good games, but it's almost they're almost like palate cleansers between the real playoff games.
Well, I would say caring nothing for either team and finding them.
Despite the fact that you live literally around the corner from one of them.
Literally around the corner.
Literally.
I am invested in Brooklyn making it to the second round to face Miami because I think they're the only team that could talk themselves into beating Miami and truly believe that they can do it.
This is how dominant
despite
a team
not
is.
Having
that,
a chance.
That this is like, this reminds me of the Tiger thing. Right? Someone is so dominant that when people are talking about somebody beating them, they have to tell you that the person themselves has to talk themselves into winning it. You know, that's the first step to overcome is just believing that you have a legitimate chance. And that's how dominant Miami's been. And that's why I think this Eastern Conference conversation is pretty short. I don't expect them to play more than 14 games
in the Eastern half.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Obviously. So, yeah. You got to play 16 to win. But I don't see it taking them longer than 14 games to get 12 wins.
That is bold.
I mean, not with this lineup they're facing. Even New York. New York's played them well this season. I think if you look at those three games, New York often did not get the best of Miami. When I say best Miami, that Miami's best team didn't show up that day.
Yes.
And it wasn't all the part of the New York Knicks. There was a lot of luck involved. So I still don't see
Miami
them as a threat.
Won't be able to just flip the switch like they think they can.
I don't think they need to flip the switch. I think the switch has been flipped. They beat the Cavs last night, and they started Juwan Howard. The switch has been flipped.
Let's see when
I mean
that
team
Howard,
is that team is revving to get out of the gate.
That's the button that the 2001 Seattle Mariners hit. It turns out they couldn't get out of coast mode.
There were some significant differences, I would say, between the 2001 Seattle Mariners and the 2012-2013. Miami Heat, one of which is that these are the defending world champions.
It is mostly height, I think, actually.
And a different sport. Different. Let's get to the West, Manziel.
All right, West Coast. Oklahoma City versus the Lakers and or Utah.
Oh, it might be an and situation? Do you think it might be and? Do you think it might be both of them?
I think that's within the rules. If Utah does actually earn the spot, there might be a big trade involving all 15 players from each team.
That would be sweet. Do either of these teams have a shot against the Thunder?
I kind of still secretly think that the Lakers could beat anybody.
Even without Kobe?
No, cancel that. I forgot that Kobe got hurt.
You forgot that Kobe got hurt?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that all day, gracious. And then I just forgot it. I'm talking to you right now.
Never forget.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, can either of these teams pose a legitimate threat in the first round against OKC?
I mean, Dwight Howard took a team to the finals.
Oh, man. You have I actually think that you need to get this checked out by a doctor. You really hate answering direct questions. The answer to the question is no. Neither one of these teams poses a legitimate threat. Although I got to think that Utah would be the less fun of the two teams for OKC to face because they'll be a little bit more punishing on defense.
Sure.
So I just dropped a pen in case anyone was wondering what that clicking sound was. Do not.
It's funny because I just dropped a penny also.
Oh, mine was a pen. Why were you? Why are you holding a penny?
It was on my desk.
What is this? The Great Depression? Maybe.
You wanted a direct answer to a direct question, man. Come on.
Fair enough. What's next?
All right. San Antonio now with T-Mac. as of today, or was that yesterday?
That's right. That's right. Today, T-Mac is back with the San Antonio Spurs. They traded in Jax for T-Mac.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a great move. I fully assume that any player that San Antonio has picked up, they have already had the conversation and agreed upon the fact that said player will only do exactly what Pop wants, and that's going to be the role. There's going to be no discussion about what he wants to do.
Yeah,
do exactly
I'm hoping
what the coach
that
wants,
this,
and that's it. And that's great for
get a little
basically
redemption,
every player.
San Antonio style.
Redemption on Houston.
Is Houston's lack of defense catch up with them in this series?
Yeah, right? It should catch up with them immediately, and they're playing a team that's better than them. They don't even have to worry about their defense catching up to them. They're probably going to lose no matter what.
Well, I don't know. I think this could be an interesting series. I mean, if Houston can somehow wrest control of the tempo from Greg Popovich, whether through just disruptive work by Sheik and maybe clogging the lanes, and they do get turnovers, you know, they also make costly gambles. But if they get enough of those going the right way, they can make a series of it. But I agree with you that just Houston's lack of discipline on defense on the perimeter is going to kill them. And the only way I see them making it out of the series is if Tony Parker goes down.
Are you willing to make Chandler Parsons an X factor of the first round?
No, because I think he can be an X factor of a game. I don't think he can be an X factor of a round. I really don't. At this point, not with that team. Although this brings up an interesting conversation I had with Chris. We were talking about what Houston's going to do in this offseason and whether it made more sense to go after Iggy or go after Dwight and maybe trade Ashik. What do you think, Manziel?
Ooh, I'm not a huge believer in Iguodala. I like him, but you know, you already have James Harden.
So you're saying you're a huge Dwight believer?
Not a huge. I do think Dwight Howard might be a bad teammate, but he probably makes more sense for the Houston Rockets.
See, I'm of the opposite mind. I think they got Ashik locked down there in the perimeter. They had Iguodala as a lockdown perimeter defender and just sort of a jack of all trades. And I think they've got themselves a really good team, potentially a 2 or 3 seed next season. I mean, I think people really forget how much Andre Iguodala does because he is one of those guys that never has a ton of points. He never has a ton of anything, really. But he's all over the floor. He covers a lot of ground on defense. He makes life miserable for opposing teams. And he can get down the floor in a few steps. So I think teams hate to play him. The Sixers are a complete dud without him, and it took him a while to find his way with the Nuggets, but I think he's doing it.
He is the perfect George Karl player, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like a super prototype George Karl player, and I think as also a thing that happens to George Karl players is they tend to see their contributions overlooked quite easily because nobody in his system is putting up big numbers in any one category. So, speaking of Iguodala and George Karl, The next matchup we have is 3-6 right now, Denver, Golden State. Mm-hmm. Are you really psyched about this one, Scott?
I'm excited to watch it. I really am. This is going to be really fun. I love watching Steph Curry play. I think Denver's going to run Golden State out in 5. I just think Golden State's a wreck right now. And maybe they'll have Steph Curry will win them a game, but their defense still looks lousy. I think Jarrett Jack still takes too many shots, even though he's been better than I thought he could be. Really running that team, I don't see them beating Denver. Unless there's some major injury change, and even that includes without Danilo. I think they've got plenty of guys to step into Danilo's spot.
Who do you like more as a point guard? Two of my favorites: Jarrett Jack and Andre Miller.
Oh, Andre Miller by a mile.
Really?
Jarrett Jack drives me a little crazy. I mean, Jarrett Jack is a better creator, he's just like a little stronger, but he also still shoots way too much, in my opinion. This is based on numbers, by the way, guys. In case people are like, where are the analytics? What I'm telling you is that my opinions are based on numbers, so you don't have to worry.
And not based on your decade now long love affair with Jarrett Jack.
That's correct. I did love him back in the day, man. You know that when he
You loved him at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, when he came to Portland, I was psyched.
Yeah,
he's been mostly a disappointment, I feel, until this stage of his career.
Yeah, I feel like there's a few point guards we're seeing right now who have really improved as they've existed as journeymen you know, obviously Jared Jack, Mike Conley, Luke Ridnour, even after a long time as a kind of a scrub.
What year is Mike Conley in? Guy. He's in his like fourth or fifth year, right?
He's in his fifth year, but I would call his first few years very, very league average.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, he certainly made a big leap this year. I don't know that I would call him a journeyman, right. though. How long is...
he's never journeyed, but...
what do you think about this Denver-Golden State series? You think Golden State has a legit shot here?
Yes, Golden State has the puncher's chance that occurs anytime both teams are destined to score 125 points a game. I think that the games in Oakland will have a very playoff atmosphere that I'll be really excited to watch. The basketball is going to be fast and furious. We'll have guys making impacts who we've never heard of, and that's something I
like. Who? Give me a guy.
Is always What's around. That? JaVale could always come back like he did last year and impact
Festus,
the
do you think Festus Ezeli is going to be the impact player that's going to...
No, not the impact player, but, you know, I honestly barely know anything about him other than his name.
And we're back. Sorry, we had technical difficulties there. We cut out somewhere during the Clippers-Memphis discussion. Suffice to say, it was the most insightful discussion we've ever had, and we simply have no way of repeating it. So we're going to move on to a topic that no one's been addressing, Kobe Bryant. Menzel, what were your reactions when you heard or saw or felt or read that Kobe Bryant had torn his Achilles this weekend?
Wait, that happened this weekend?
As far as I know, didn't it? Friday? I don't know.
I wasn't sure. So just as in when any important or famous person dies, you start hearing all types of things about what they've done. And when Kobe Bryant got hurt, all of a sudden I started hearing from the people who I consider most likely to trash Kobe's stats that he'd had an excellent year, especially given his advanced age and the overall struggles of the Lakers team.
Mm-hmm.
So what I thought immediately was like, well, how can I determine for myself if he had a good season or not? And
did you say that out loud to yourself or just thinking?
It was a visible thought bubble which had formed above my head.
Okay.
It did make it into the color spectrum, so... So the thought I had was, well, wait a minute, you know, guys can be really good when they score 28 points a game, or realistically, they could be just as effective scoring 21 points a game. And, you know.
What? But that's less.
Yeah, but, you know, players sometimes become more efficient over time while scoring less, or their role changes on a team. There's lots of ways to be effective besides just scoring, which I think as anybody who would bother to even open this podcast knows, that, you know, obviously there's other ways to think about who's a good player and who's not a good player in this league, besides points, besides rebounds.
In this league, which league are we talking about again?
National Basketball Association.
The NBA you're talking about.
Forefathers of the All-American Professional Basketball Association.
This here league. All right. So, I remember somewhere down the line I asked you what were your feelings when you learned about Kobe's injury, and you still have not answered that question.
my feelings are I don't care. The Lakers were a number 7, 8, and or missing the playoffs team with Kobe. As someone who has felt personally victimized unreasonably, I would add, that the players on my favorite team weren't given enough attention because they weren't winning enough. I don't care about Kobe Bryant.
Well, and your favorite team is, just for full disclosure to the fans out there.
My favorite team right now is the Portland Trail.
Wait a minute. What do you mean? Whoa. What do you mean right now?
Well, I would be a Sonics fan if there were Sonics to be fans of.
Okay. So which team was hurt by Kobe? The Sonics or the Trailblazers?
Probably both over the years, but probably mostly the Blazers. Although that was before the time I was a Blazer fan.
Okay.
And all my, I've never rooted for a team good enough to be really hurt by another player.
So your hatred of Kobe is irrational, is what you're telling us.
Yeah, it's more of my apathy towards Kobe.
Well, I personally was bummed out for him. And, I, you know, I've been a Kobe fan for a while. He turned me around. And, I, you know, for me, I agree with you. They weren't going anywhere. I don't think they were a legitimate threat. But it's just more fun with Kobe in the playoffs. And I really hope that this isn't the end of his career. I'm hoping it's not. I think it's not. But that's a pretty brutal injury for an athlete. So I was sad to see it. And also just shocked. You know, it's just not something you expect. It was of all the people, you know, I know people were talking about Kobe's minutes. I did not expect an injury like this. So I was surprised.
Just generically, without pointing any fingers, were the minutes, do you think, related to the fact that he got injured?
I have no idea. They, you know, all the whatever the doctors they have on the show say this is a fluke injury. It has nothing to do with conditioning or wear and tear. So I believe them. Whatever, you know, that doesn't mean it was a good idea to play him 48 minutes a night, but that's a different story.
So let's get back to the question, though, is
Did he have a good season? How do what were you looking at? What stats were you looking at?
Well, you know, I pull up my trusty basketball reference, and I see that he scored per game 27.3 points per game. Last year he had 27.9, year before 25, 27, 26, 28, 31. All right, we have a record of high scoring. This year doesn't look out of line with any of the last, looks like, 13 years for Kobe. Mm-hmm. So, all right, rebound or points aren't enough. His rebounds per game, never high, are 4.7 this year. His career average is 4.2. Again, totally in line with what he's been doing. Excuse me, that was defensive rebounds, but the same goes for total rebounds. He's 5.6 this year, 5.3 career.
Right.
So his rebounds haven't changed. His assists are a little bit up to 6 from 4.8.
That's not a little bit. That's okay, a significant amount.
It's a nice bump.
That's 1.2 assists per game more. That's a lot. Nice bump. That's a big jump.
His shooting percentage this year is 46.3 compared to 45.4 career, which is a nice bump, but again, not a huge difference. As three-point attempts are up. His free throw attempts are up 0.4 per game. So basically what I'm getting to is that these numbers
are... His effective field goal percentage is up.
Yeah, well, we'll get there in a second. These numbers, these per-game numbers, are basically totally in line
with
he's been doing for his
career.
We're not there yet. So.
Oh, we're not there yet. We're going to take it slow. We're going to take it slow. Ladies, light a candle. We're going to take it real slow.
Yeah. Just come back next week. So anyways, I'm looking at these numbers. I don't see that these are out of line with his career. So the question becomes, obviously these people saying that he's had a great year are people who I know to be very well versed in advanced stats. So what are they looking at when they say Kobe Bryant's had a great year, a better year than they thought Kobe Bryant would have going in? Right. So that's my question.
Right. I think a few things. So I think the main thing is that he had a number of kind of high-profile, high-assist games. There was a couple games where he had 14 each against Utah and the Thunder, followed by 11 against the Hornets. A little later, he had 9 against Phoenix. So there was a stretch where he was always right around 10 assists per game. There, it looks like kind of in late January, early February, and I think people were pretty impressed by that. So the average isn't that much better, but there have been a lot of pretty eye-popping games from Kobe in the assist department. And I think that counts for something. And I think people are also more, it's a like KG. I'm certainly, my attitude towards him is soft as he's gotten older, and I just have respect for the fact that he's able to keep playing. When you see Shaq just sitting there babbling on TV and you realize he and Kobe play together, and Shaq is nowhere near prepared to play basketball, it's pretty remarkable. Obviously, that's not a fair comparison. There are plenty of years in the NBA when Shaq wasn't ready to play basketball, but still, you know, he is something to behold. And I think also that his Twitter and Facebook presence has endeared him to a lot of writers. He's proven to be kind of clever.
It depends on to what degree you think he's self-aware, right?
I do.
Like, if you think it's all planned out, then he's a genius. If you don't, then he's just kind of a weirdo.
Well, I think it's got to be a bit of both, like in most situations, right? I mean, and maybe it wasn't always planned out, and at some point he realized he had to embrace the sort of heel turn, you know?
Yeah.
He's Wonder Boy, Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Did I say Wonder Boy? Oh, we're going to get... If we had listeners, we would get a lot of hate mail about that. I'm sorry.
All right, so getting back to Kobe. So you've detailed some reasons why people are saying he's had a great year, but none of those are based on what are based on advanced stats, really.
I would agree with that. I think that the main thing that he's taken a leap forward in is assists. His true shooting, if I'm not mistaken, and his effective field goals are higher than his averages.
Yeah, so
which is impressive.
Real quick, his true shooting 570 this year, which is a very good number. At his personal best since 576 in 2007 when he was in his 20s. So his true shooting percentage is improved by about 40 points. His effective field goal percentage also improved by about 40 points. His other numbers, let's see, his plus minus, raw plus minus is basically plus 4 per 100 possessions, which in previous years, it's kind of been plus 5, plus 6. He's a clear
I show on 82 games it being plus 5.4, but...
Okay, I'm just looking at it. I'm just taking his O rating minus D rating, so that's per 100
right,
possessions.
Right.
So it could be different than his raw per game or whatnot.
The O and D rating are for the team while he's on the floor, I think, per 100 possessions.
Yes. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So per 100 possessions, he's on the floor.
Right.
They're showing 4 points difference.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, his usage rates, and I don't think we've talked about usage rate on the show before, but just to give everyone an idea, it's an estimate of the percentage of plays used by a player. When you say plays used, that means that he takes the shot, or he commits a turnover, or he gets to the free throw line. So you'd expect that on a team with complete parity that your usage rate would be 20% of all the shots and all the plays. Kobe, who's always been in the 30s, is actually down about 4 points from last season in his usage, 4 percentage points in his usage rate. While his true shooting percentage and effective field goal percentage, and his field goal percentage for that matter, have gone up.
What about his PER? Do we know? I assume it's just always high.
His PER is 23.0 this season. His career PER is 23.4. The last couple seasons, he was 21.9, 23.9, 21.9. So his PER actually hasn't changed that much.
Well, I mean, I think I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I think that the issue is that everyone has been waiting for Kobe's demise. And in year 17, he put up average for him, which are great numbers in some categories, and above average for him numbers, which are also great in other categories. So, while we certainly saw plenty of his kind of lackadaisical transition defense and inattention to detail on defense, we also saw him, you know, playing as efficiently on offense maybe as we've seen him play and in his 17th year playing most minutes, carrying a team that was in total disarray. So, I think that has earned him some respect, and he has been, I think, less of a jerk this year than he has been in some other seasons.
Well, I mean, I do feel like playing on a team that isn't, a 1, 2, or 3 seed has changed a lot of perceptions about kind of who Kobe is and what he's doing. He's now somewhat of an underdog. Somehow, son of an NBA player.
You're right. That's true, and he's handled it well. I think, you know. So Manziel, we've had this discussion here. When you're looking at a player, as we're going into the offseason, obviously there's going to be a lot of talk about who deserves what. When you're looking at a player, what are your go-to stats? What are the stats that right now in your mind are the most informative?
Well, I think you need to look at, in terms of the advanced stats, there's a few different ones you need to look at. We just talked about true shooting percentage, which is something I really look for in a guy who you want to be a scorer.
And that's more important than field goal percentage because it takes into account the player's field goal, free throw percentage, three-point percentage, and two-point percentage.
Yeah, did you say free throw percentage first? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so that incorporates not just, you know, the types of shots they're taking, and especially for guys who are you want to be a frontline scorer who's going to have to go to the line quite a bit. You want to be able to incorporate that into an easy stat you're comparing two guys. You know, I think you do need to think about roles on the team. So the other advanced stats you get at Basketball Reference, which is kind of my one-stop shop, you know, you get your defensive rebound percentage, which is a stat I really like when you're looking for a defender, more so even than blocks and steals and those types of stats. I like to look at, I tend to see that good defenders have good rebound numbers, especially good post defenders. You know, there's offensive defensive rating, and the last thing I'm going to plug, this is not really an advanced stat, but to me a very important stat, is minutes played. I'm a big believer that players who are good play a lot of minutes.
Interesting theory. Certainly it's probably true by and large, although there, of course, there are plenty of players that are trapped behind guys that they ought to get playing time over. I mean, I agree with most of those, although, again, I think each one of those stats is still just it's a slightly more refined version of the same tool and gets at some big percentages. But I really, you know, I know you don't like this answer, but I think you really got to look at, when you're evaluating a player, you got to look at what is he being asked to do by his team. You know, what roles is he playing for his team? And then you look at that and say, how's he doing that? You know, how's he doing on that stuff?
So
and if he's got some other qualities that you can see from scouting from other areas, great. You know, but you can't just look at the numbers. I think you really got to break down, you know, what the guy's doing for his team.
All right, I think that can cut both ways, though, too, because there's a lot of guys who are excelling in a role for their team. I'm thinking of like a Taj Gibson type player.
Right.
Who, you know, aren't going to excel in similar but not similar enough roles on other teams, or even just the same role in an expanded number of minutes, or a decrease.
You might be right. You might be right. So, I mean, I think that's where that minutes played comes into account for sure. But I still think you have to. Obviously, you can never replicate the circumstances. So you're not saying, well, he had this exact productivity. I think you look at it in terms of, you know, the basic skills. Some of them you can measure. Some of them you just have to watch, you know.
I don't believe in watching basketball.
I know you don't. It takes up too many of your basketball thoughts.
Yep.
It steals your precious BTs away from numbers.
All these pixels are not data points.
We would like to apologize to our viewers, first of all, for half of our guests being gone. We'd also like to apologize to our viewers for the fact that there's no video ever, and I don't know why you keep calling yourselves viewers. It's kind of embarrassing. And for the fact that there are almost no stats in this podcast till the very end. But we had fun, and we just wanted to reach out to our 2.5 fans. Damn it. I hope no one thinks that's a reference to 2.5 Men, because I hate that show.
But they got new blood.
Who are they? Oh, they got Keanu's little brother. What's his name? Quincy.
I don't even remember.
Ashton. That's his name. Anyway. All right, guys. Well, you know, look, here's the deal. We're out scouting the streets looking for additional correspondence. Please do not write to us. We're not interested in hearing from you. But we will not be a two-man weave all the time. We thought that we owed it to you to come out and say hello. So thank you very much for tuning in. And good night, Menzel. You want to say good night?
Good night, Brooklyn.
And until next time, save us a seat at the next Sonics game. I got to let you down, but in an hour I will change my mind. I got to let you down, but in an hour I will change my mind. It is like magic to me. Making mistakes and people